Hello and welcome everybody to the Trans-Pacific podcast. My name is Angela Schottenhammer from KU Leuven, Belgium, and I'm the supervisor of the ERC Advanced Grant Trans-Pacific.
As we have seen, a surgeon like Agustin Sanchez was certainly instrumental in curing a range of ailments and healing a variety of minor and major physical traumas, such as bruises or wounds. And he also had tools related to scurvy in his doctoral kit. Scurvy has a history that can be traced back into antiquity. But it was particularly with the onset of long-distance blue water seafaring that the disease started to show itself. Scurvy developed after several months aboard ship. In the age of sail, the Portuguese were the first European seafarers to be confronted with appalling cases and losses due to the disease, with incidences sometimes rising up to 70% of the crew. Subsequently, scurvy continued to be a scourge for ship's crews of all seafaring nations, as well as in a number of other contexts on land. Early modern physicians in many European countries attempted to find ways to explain the origin and nature of the disease. A wide array of theories was developed, but without a proper understanding of the basic nutritional principles, it was a painstaking search that was complicated by the persistent reputation of ancient medical theories, such as Galen's four humors. Throughout history, scurvy has been a seasonal plague in many regions of the world, where diets turned nutritionally insufficient. From time to time, the records of the oceanic voyages provide us with rare glimpses of scurvy and indigenous knowledge about the disease. Vasco da Gama benefited from local Arab seamen's advice to administer oranges to scurvy patients. A few decades later, when the second expedition of the French navigator Jacques Cartier of 1535-1536 in search of a northwestern passage to China stranded in the Quebec area, his crew was heavily afflicted. The condition of the sailors was finally alleviated by means of a traditional cure, a decoction made from the needles of a pine species provided to them by members of a local native tribe. In 1753, the Scottish naval surgeon James Lind was the first to carry out systematic clinical experiments in order to test the efficacy of a variety of alleged anti-scorbutic foodstuffs. Not much later, the famous explorer James Cook went a step further by successfully experimenting with anti-scorbutic measures during his expeditions to the South Sea. By the end of the century, lime juice would become a common addition to the sailors' daily diet. All these developments were taking place almost two centuries after the life and times of Agustin Sanchez, our Spanish surgeon on board of the San Martin. Back then, the struggle with scurvy was still in full swing, and the shipboard diets of those days certainly did not help to prevent the disease from occurring. Spanish sailors of the galleons commonly received a diet of bread, cheese, beans, salt meats, salt fish, olive oil, and vinegar, further enriched with a supply of condiments that formed part of the Spanish diet of those days. Garlic, as we have heard, and onions often occurred as part of the diet too, but these could not be properly kept fresh during a long voyage. There was also a dark social dimension to the composition of shipboard diets. Generally, common sailors received rather ordinary foods, while the staff, wealthy passengers, and clerics were entitled to receive high standard dishes. When common sailors fell ill, the food they were administered was exactly the food that was usually reserved for the captain and his fellow officers. One source refers to a box of lemons that was reserved for nuns who took passage on a Trans-Pacific galleon, perhaps in case scurvy would crop up. In spite of the apparent diversity of these foodstuffs, a manifest lack of vegetables or fruits containing the indispensable vitamin C was the direct cause of high mortality rates. However, around the start of the passages of the Manila galleons, the prospects of successfully dealing with scurvy were fairly good. The Tornaviaje, the return voyage from Manila to Acapulco, led by Andrés de Urdaneta in 1565, was a long and dangerous adventure on the Pacific Ocean. Yet Urdaneta had gained sufficient knowledge about scurvy and the importance of fruit in the diet. This enabled him to keep his crew almost free from scurvy. Apparently, this knowledge found its way into one of the books in Agustin Sanchez's small shipboard library. This was the Tractado Breve de Medicina, written by Agustin Farfán. This work contains a recipe for a mouth rinse to treat neglected gums, which was based on lemons, oranges, and alum. This suggests that Sanchez had direct access to cures that could alleviate the effects of scurvy, and more generally, that insights into certain treatments of the disease had developed in 16th century Spanish medicine, considerably antedating those in James Lind's work. Yet although medical knowledge circulated in the early modern world, it was not likely shared among competing maritime powers, and even not within the confines of the Hispanic seafaring world. Other Manila galleons, such as those commanded by Don Francisco de Tejada in 1617-1618, were provisioned with an amount of lemons and lemon syrup to avoid scurvy. But the practice was not turned into a generally established preventive measure, perhaps due to the fact that fruits were so difficult to keep during long oceanic voyages. One item in Agustin Sanchez's inventory list, which especially catches our attention, is a certain amount of preserved oranges called conserva de naranjada. The identification and the function of this article in the possession of the surgeon remains somewhat enigmatic and may have been a kind of marmalade or succate with or without an anti-scorbutic purpose. Perhaps there is a much simpler explanation. Orange preserves were one of the commodities that were brought to the markets of Manila by Chinese ships and further traded across the Pacific. Gemelli Careri was able to finance his trip by purchasing products in one country and selling them in the next, making substantial profit. As he relates in his account, dates, wine, spirits, and all the fruits of Persia, which one carries to India, either dried or pickled in vinegar, on which one makes a good profit. Was our surgeon perhaps involved in some private trade? It is hard to tell, but we know that fruit preserves were not an uncommon commodity aboard Spanish ships in the Pacific. In his account, Pedro Fernández de Quirós, who participated in Álvaro de Mendaña's exploratory expeditions in the initial years of the 17th century, in search of the unknown southern continent refers to quince marmalade, carne de membrillo, that was frequently used as an item of barter during encounters with native Pacific Islanders and perhaps also consumed by the crew.
Beyond his role as physician, Sanchez was also a sailor among other crew members on board the Manila Galleon, albeit a lettered and studied one. Although medical books formed the main part of his library, his reading practices extended beyond the medical domain and give us insights into the broader shipboard culture maritime physicians took part in, as well as how Sanchez's own shipboard life related to the books he would have consulted by candlelight. How were his books read or used at sea, and how would they have served in his social context? Sanchez's reading practices at sea may be placed in three categories: medical books and manuscripts, somewhat more secular literature for enjoyment and education, and spiritual literature. Among this last category, we find the second part, or segunda parte, of the Abecedario Spiritual by the Franciscan mystic Fray Francisco de Osuna, originally published at Seville in 1530. It may give us an indication of Sanchez's spiritual convictions and practices. The Abecedario was essentially a guide of meditation practices, which followed the doctrine of recogimiento, or recollection, by which one tried to reach a unio mystica with Christ. The book formed part of Spanish ascetic and meditative literature, which emphasized inner experience. In this book, Osuna emphasized an anti-intellectual approach towards a methodical practice of prayer and meditation, directed at lay people as well as clergymen. How may Sanchez have used this book on board the galleon? His meditation would have been carried out in a dark and quiet place, with eyes cast downward or in one pointed focus. He would have had to control or shut off his senses one by one in order to meditate on the Passion of Christ with a will to surrender to the divine. Osuna's work would also practically serve Sanchez in the field of shipboard nutrition, as it contained dietary prescriptions based on food preparation in Franciscan monasteries. The reading of religious texts was not uncommon, as other sailors crossing the Pacific also indicated, bringing illustrated Catholic books or even devotional prints depicting the Passion of Christ. Often produced in Antwerp by printers Wierix or Plantin, they served as a visual aid for illiterate sailors in shared ritual prayer. The second category of Sanchez's non-medical texts can be labeled as secular literature. It included the Alivio de Caminantes by Castilian writer-publisher Juan de Timoneda, published around 1567. It formed a compendium of proverbs, fables, and stories, in the mode of the Exempli or the Decamerone. It included popular jokes and moral anecdotes, which illustrated a specific point, revealing and criticizing social values and positions of class. It featured characters of all professions, from butchers to soldiers, merchants, philosophers, even doctors, yet always with the purpose of eliciting laughter. It borrowed from traditions of Spanish improvised poetry and formed a possible resistance against or subversion of elitist discourse. Through stories, it allowed one to position oneself in a social world. Its potential for shipboard practice was uniting crew and passengers in oral culture, centered around funny and meaningful stories. Timoneda himself emphasized the importance of storytelling as a performance for a listening audience. For Sanchez, this could include retelling them to the unlettered sailors as storytelling was a common way for sailors to pass the long months spent on board the galleon. We also know that Timoneda's Alivio was avidly read in the New World and formed a popular item in the 16th century Sevillian Mexican book trade. A third element among Sanchez's books defied categorization and proved to be more than a medical work, namely Los Problemas de Villalobos, published in Zaragoza in 1544. Although undoubtedly a medical work, it was also a compendium of different elements and styles, to be of practical use as well as entertainment. This is apparent from its full title, Los Problemas de Cuerpos Naturales y Morales y Dialogos de Medicina y el Tratado de las Tres Grandes y una Canción y la Comedia de Amphitrión. Alongside Plautus' comedy Amphitrión, it would also feature poetry, moral treatises, essays on natural philosophy, comic stories, and tragic comedy. Villalobos emphasized how laughter separates us from the animals, as it could also ease the hardship of shipboard life. The use of satire as shipboard reading material may also be seen in the case of later 18th century travelers, who used it as reading material to pass time at sea. As a multifaceted work, Villalobos' Problemas also carried two further trans-Pacific connotations. His own son, Ruy López de Villalobos, perished as a navigator on the 1542 Antonio de Mendoza expedition to the Moluccas or Spice Islands. The book also appeared in the library of the Inca, known as Inca Garcilaso de la Vega, a renowned 16th century Peruvian writer and chronicler of Peruvian history, Inca life, and the Spanish conquest of Peru. The library accompanying Sanchez would have been used to spend time on the 3, 5, or 6-month-long voyage, by meditation and reading of stories, and was indispensable to his medical practice. Perhaps he also used these books beyond his personal reading, to help put his patients at ease, or to engage in shared social practices of storytelling with the crew and passengers. Excerpts could even be read aloud to illiterate traveling companions on board the galleon. In addition, the books in Sanchez's library may also have served as a mirror in which he could reflect on himself, his world, his memories, and his fate. As to the fate of his library, it is telling that his collection of 19 old books and handwritten manuscripts was auctioned off at Acapulco as a single collection. It was kept in one piece. The collection was acquired by a possible colleague and physician, Diego López, while Sanchez's medical equipment and belongings were auctioned off and sold among several individuals. Beyond an interest in the medical matters, López may also have related to this library in a similar way than its previous owner, Agustín Sanchez.
This was the Trans-Pacific Podcast, part of the ERC Advanced Grant, The Structure and Impact of Trans-Pacific Trade, 16th to 18th Centuries, the Manila Galleon Trade Beyond Silver and Silks.